Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
G'day, I'm Andrew Phillips, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So the voice of Andrew Phillips, our Australian listener. We've got a few of them, but he's one of the Kickstarter backers who've enabled us to keep the Tennis Podcast going in 2019. So thank you, Andrew, for lending your voice to us to help us introduce the show, which comes to you today from Westminster in London. And Catherine Whittaker and Grad Matt are here. We are ready to talk tennis because that's what the Tennis Podcast has been for the last nearly 7 years. I was working out 516 episodes in which we've covered 10 of the 15 Grand Slams won by Novak Djokovic. We've covered Andy Murray becoming world number one, winning Olympic gold twice. I mean, these are generational levels of years, Catherine Whittaker. I'm getting old before our listeners.
Yeah, it has been tennis heavy. You are right. It's been a tennis heavy 7 years, as advertised.
Thank God.
You're trying to make me feel old.
Well,
is that what you're doing?
You have gone from your 20s to your 30s in that time.
Yeah, this will be you in a few years, Matt.
How old were you when the Tennis Podcast started, Matt?
May 2012.
Yes.
I would have been, quick bit of maths, I would have been 16.
16.
So I've gone from my teens to my 20s.
Right.
How does that make you feel, David?
I feel very old, still just as old. And we have so much more tennis to talk to you about this week because Miami is a week old. And it's, again, one of those funny old weeks, isn't it? When you kind of think, well, what has happened and what is still to come? Because it's not the start of the tournament, it's halfway through, but loads has happened. And most of it, again, involves Bianca Andreescu.
Yeah.
It feels like.
Yeah, that's really true, actually, isn't it? I mean, I'm not sure. After winning Indian Wells, what would sort of your standard odds be on an Indian Wells winner going on to do the Sunshine Double, as they now call it? I'm sure the term Sunshine Double has only existed for the last year or so, but people talk like everyone's always called it. Well, speaking of age, David, did they call it that 20 years ago?
Yes, I think that's a more of a recent thing, actually, is my recollection, because my recollection of this tournament is that it was called Key Biscayne or the Lipton, because it used to be sponsored by Lipton iced tea, and that was the one that everybody talked about, and Indian Wells was just felt like the kind of warm-up to that by comparison. Well that's changed.
I'm old enough to remember when Miami branded itself as the fifth Grand Slam, and those days feel a long time ago now.
Now they're branding themselves as the new US Open.
Is that coming from them?
That is an actual quote from a bigwig at IMG.
Right.
Yeah. So they've not
Could
achieved
that.
Could
I start a tournament in my back garden and call it the new Wimbledon?
I think you could try, but I don't.
But I mean, like, you've got to be able to substantiate it somehow.
No, you haven't. Clearly not.
Right,
although
okay.
Perhaps
that's where I'm going wrong. Right?
Probably have you got Miami, a parking lot.
Miami is closer, I would say, to the US Open than your back garden is to Wimbledon.
But like, what's the basis for? What is the basis for that?
It's on
hard courts, in America.
For anybody who hasn't followed the story of Miami's relocation, the Miami Open has relocated from Key Biscayne, where it was at Crandon Park for 20 plus years, and it has gone quite a long way north, away from Key Biscayne, and is now at the home of the Miami Dolphins, where they have a 13,800 seat stadium inside the Miami Dolphins arena, which holds 65,000 people.
I think you mean Hard Rock Stadium.
The Hard Rock Stadium, yeah. Hard Rock, pay us. We've said your name. Okay, all right, don't. But yeah, it's a massive feat that they have accomplished here just logistically to get this tournament played in the first year. They've used the enormous car park acreage that they have to build what they've described as a tennis campus, all the outside courts, dozens of those, and the VIP areas and all that sort of thing. But yeah, it's impressive. I think feel-wise, it still takes, I would say, a little bit of getting used to, certainly from a centre court perspective, because it has a different feel to what Crandon Park had.
Yeah, I mean, my experience of watching it on the TV, I'm not there. Prime will be covering it in the studio here in London from quarterfinals onwards. Is, I think, similar from what I'm hearing from those on site, and there are quite a lot of, but Prime have got their commentators on site, BT have a presence on site. There's quite a lot. It's more British journos that tend to go to Miami than Indian Wells for various different reasons, which is that I think it looks really good. I like the colour scheme. Matt and I were just discussing that in detail.
Sort of a light blue. Anne Kiotharong was explaining to me that there are two kinds of blue and they have official names. And I can't remember what they are.
They look really good on TV. The outside courts look great. I think it's quite cool for them to increase the amount of seating on those because there's a lot of atmosphere. I'm not that sold on the centre court as it stands at the moment. I think that it's too obviously a stadium within a stadium. You can see the killed seats from the unused portion of the Hard Rock Stadium, and the crowd feels too distant. It has a slightly Madrid Calle Magica centre court vibe to it, which is that even when it's full, it doesn't feel full, doesn't feel atmospheric. Maybe it feels better when you're in there on the court. By the looks of things, they're getting really good crowds, but that centre court just doesn't feel full with atmosphere to me. And certainly we've seen quite a lot of top players looking quite grouchy on that centre court. Now, that may be that, you know, most of the top players have been around a long time and they don't tend to love change too much, do they?
Remember blue clay?
Well, exactly. So it could all be fabulous and they still would be grouchy about it, but I think Federer's grouchy about the amount of grit they've put in the court surface. There's quite a lot of consternation about that. Novak Djokovic hasn't played particularly well so far. What's your impression, Matt?
Well, also, I thought Federer said something quite interesting about how you didn't say it in these terms, but what I read into it was basically the players having to make a kind of sensory adjustment playing on the centre court because it's so different to all other main tennis stadiums because the colour's different, as we've said. You've got the stands, which are so high on one side, you know, you almost feel like you need a telescope at the top to actually see what's going on. And then he's talked about this noise, it's like a humming that you've got from it being inside a stadium, which you kind of get in indoor tennis, but less so outdoors. He said you never get that silence. It's this constant sort of humming, buzzing almost, and I think the players are really having to adjust to that as well.
And Djokovic said it's all sunlight is gone from the main stadium court at 1 p.m. in the afternoon. So he said it feels like an indoor court basically. So I mean, none of those things are necessarily bad, and there's no doubt that the Key Biscayne tournament it had fallen out of favour in all the ways, hadn't it, with the players, with the journalists, and there was so much pressure on it from Indian Wells that I think it's good that they've done something radical to reinvent it.
They couldn't expand the operation at Crandon Park anymore. They'd tried to get the permission to do so, to invest in it. The family that owns the land just didn't want the sort of expansion that they were demanding. and it also felt pretty old and tired. I first went to Crandon Park in 1999. You know, it's a while ago, and it felt really cool and it's still new back then. And I remember feeling it was a similar sort of time to when I went to my first US Open. And it felt like a mini US Open at that time. When I went back there 10 years later, it didn't really feel like that anymore for some reason. It just felt a bit shabby. It needed an upgrade.
Well, now, David, it's the new US Open.
Yeah.
I thought,
it's back.
I thought, actually, by contradicting himself, Nick Kyrgios summed it up quite well, because he put on Twitter, "I low-key miss Crandon Park." Then he went on the Tennis Channel and said, "Oh, this is a massive upgrade." And it's kind of those two things, like you can kind of almost feel nostalgic about not being at Crandon Park anymore, but at the same time appreciate the need to move on and it be a better, bigger place. And by all accounts, it's a massive site, and they've got much more room, and there's parking on site for all the fans and that sort of thing. Although apparently it's a bit of a rip-off, but...
the parking or the tickets?
The parking, yeah. $40, I read. But, you know, it's those two things.
New feature, parking costs at all major tennis events compared here on the Tennis Podcast.
That child, not happy.
No. $40 a day?
Mm. Well, apparently they advertise it as 35, parking. And then there's a 5 added service fee or something, you know.
Oh, right, okay.
Right, okay.
I said it was tennis heavy. This podcast hasn't been very tennis heavy. All good stuff, man. It's
setting the scene.
Great content.
Car parking info provided as well as the tennis. So, yeah, I said at the outset that most of it is circled around Bianca Andreescu, who came in as the champion of Indian Wells and promptly in her first round went to set and 5-1 down against Arina Kamelia-Begu. So how is she still here for a start? I mean, that is extraordinary.
Well, to finish the point that I was fudgingly trying to make and helpfully led on to a whole different
car park
discussion
chat.
Topic. would there ever have been as low odds as a week ago on somebody... When an Indian Wells champion going on to do the Sunshine Double?
Elena Vesnina.
I didn't have particularly high hopes for Dominic Thiem.
And they were founded.
Would they have been as low as Bianca Andreescu?
Similar. My biggest worry with Andreescu is that she looked physically kind of spent at the end of Indian Wells.
She was cramping. She was cramping in the semis, and then she was getting the treatment on the shoulder in the finals,
but
wasn't she?
I had no concern over her level of tennis, but I thought, and because
also
they did the draw,
mentally, surely everyone was expecting a letdown.
And because they did the draw while Indian Wells was still going on, she wasn't seeded.
That didn't go down well with you, did it?
I was really annoyed about that. They were doing the draw in the middle of the Indian Wells final.
I don't understand that.
Yeah,
either.
Surely from a PR perspective, that is a foot shooting.
An emphatic own goal.
Yeah, I feel like the US Open wouldn't do that.
No. And if you're going to call yourself the new US Open. From there, I agree with you. I mean, she was on fumes. I mean, I was even reading people saying, why has she been allowed to take to the court if she just can't get around it? And yet she managed to come back and win that match against Arina Kamelia-Begu. Then she beat Sofia Kenin, which, you know, that is a good result. Mm-hmm. She beat her, I think, in straight sets. And then we had the third round match, repeat of the Indian Wells final against Angelique Kerber in the dead of the night. I know this because I was commentating, and in American time, it was after 1 a.m. In my time, it was after 5 a.m.
Such a shame it was so late.
Yes, however...
But locally, I mean, obviously here, but it was always going to be late to some extent here, but for that to be on court at 1 a.m. with barely anyone watching...
And the sad thing is that I'm probably only going to briefly touch on just how brilliant Andreescu was again.
Because there's aggro to talk about.
Because we've got aggro to discuss, but let's just get the tennis out of the way first, quickly. Brilliant forehands, brilliant backhands, lots of variety. Right, now, the handshake. In the second set, Angelique Kerber was becoming increasingly aggravated. You could tell that she just wasn't happy with the way it was going. I thought she was nearly tanking at the start of the second set. She was sort of hitting these bailout type of forehands, not really committing to rallies, but hitting enough winners just to at least still stay in the match. And then suddenly she dug in. Andreescu, I don't know whether she got nervous or just tired, but Kerber won five games in a row. Third set.
This cafe was really quiet when we sat down.
Well,
created a commotion.
The Angelique Kerber fans amongst us are not happy at the conversation point and where it's going. Third set, Andreescu knuckled down again and just took her apart. I mean, it was amazing to watch the tennis she produced. But the handshake, she came to the net. I didn't realise at the time exactly what she'd said. And what she'd said was, "You're the biggest drama queen ever," in the direction of Andreescu, who had had a medical timeout. She'd had treatments between games. But after I heard this, I really was searching in my mind for things that I could attribute that comment to. Why has she said that? Has she behaved in a way that is warranting that? Nothing had really struck me that Andreescu had done wrong, to be quite honest. At the same time, you know, the look on Kerber's face, she was so irritable, so angry. And I've seen this before, you know, when she loses tight matches, her handshakes can be no-look handshakes, you know. And she's not a good loser, let's be honest. She's not. In the immediate aftermath, she is the
she's
sorest
loser. She's a better
loser
on Twitter than she is on the court.
Yes, well, when she'd... somebody very adeptly put, I much prefer shady 1 a.m. Angie Kerber after a loss than I do PR version at 11:30 a.m. the next day.
Great fight out there. Tough loss, but great fight. That is not what you said on the court.
No, and Nick Kyrgios... We rely on Nick to come out and reply. You just said on court that she is the biggest drama queen ever, and now this. So anyway, what was your take of what you saw, and the subsequent reaction? Because it went mental on Twitter.
I mean, the main thing is I thought it was really funny. And interesting, and I like that. I just wish she'd owned it.
Yeah.
You know, just, yeah, okay, she clearly doesn't like Andreescu, that's fine.
Yeah, like, she's a you know, annoying little teenager that's come along and beaten her twice in the space of a week.
Yeah.
I would probably be a bit of a sore loser. Yeah, own it and go, ugh. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Own it. Own it, Angie.
And the thing is, I just feel like there's actually so little of this kind of, you know, for want of a better word, aggro in tennis, that
there's no better word, Matt.
Sorry, yeah. That these...
What have I done?
These small moments get magnified. Like, maybe it's not great to, you know, it's nice if you show a bit more respect, but in a grand scheme of things, it's not a huge deal.
Nice doesn't sell, does it?
Exactly.
We don't want to. We've had too much nice in tennis in recent years.
And people sort of... You know, these moments, these little moments spiral out of control and people go, like, crazy about them. But, you know, it's just a bit of fun, really.
Yeah, so it's nice to have some aggro that is just completely harmless,
yeah,
funny, fun aggro. You know, there's no political debate or moral debate, you know, a la post-US Open final, nothing like that. It's just, oh, that was interesting. That was fun.
Don't you feel it again shows just how good Andreescu must be to be 18? I imagine this is a little bit how people felt when Boris Becker came along. I know that's a big statement. Maybe she's not as good as Boris Becker. I personally think she could be. But the way she's just upset the apple cart, the status quo out there, and just come in and bowled in and thought nothing of beating everybody.
And obviously she's younger, but there are comparisons for me with Danielle Collins as well. You know, these young women coming along and not being afraid to get in people's faces and want it and be competitive. And I think that's fantastic. And I do think it's quite liberating to see women being like that, because I think there are certain expectations of women. You know, I think we had a sports minister in this country a few years ago, not that long ago at all, say that competitiveness isn't very feminine. You know, we need to try and sell sport to young girls in a way that avoids the competitive element, makes it sort of fun and glittery. And no, competitiveness is every bit as feminine a quality as it is masculine, and I just love it. I love that they're completely in your face, and
yeah, she loves it.
Yeah, prepared to do anything to win, and you know they're gritty and gnarly and cool. I love
it. What I do think with Andreescu that's different to someone like Collins is that Andreescu backs it up to the point where.
Oh, she's a better player than Danielle Collins.
There's nothing any of you can do about it. She's not winning because she's getting in people's faces and putting them off. She's just outplaying you all. And I find it very interesting how the next few months go with that sort of game. You know, how good could she be?
Well, what shot can't she hit? I'm still waiting to find one. You know, just every game she seems to throw in something that you just don't see from other players. And we'll see how she goes on, and obviously got the rest of Miami, but we'll see how she goes on the clay. But you'd think it would be a game that would transfer well to the clay as well. Beforehand, I think Brad Gilbert said that he thinks it might be the best forehand in women's tennis already, and throw in the fact that she can slice and lob and serves decent. I mean, she's got everything. And she's 18.
She plays today. She's probably going to lose.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Seems to be out of date.
Tennis news. Did she play today?
I can't remember, but Catherine will look it up. So that's happened. And meanwhile, Naomi Osaka, who obviously is the Grand Slam talking point from a women's tennis point of view, has lost. She's gone out to Shea Suwei, and she lost in...
Contevate,
okay.
Contevate beat someone in the last round.
Yes, well, that's what tends to happen when
she
people go
through. She beat Tomjanovic, didn't she?
Yes.
And then before that, she beat Anisimova.
That's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
So, Contevate against Andreescu later today.
Should we just talk through the draw, Matt?
Osaka lost to Shea Suwei despite being a set and 5-3 ahead. I found an absolutely fascinating quote when she was asked, did you underestimate Shea Suwei? She says, no, I think if anything... maybe I overestimated myself, which I find just a fantastic quote of assuming that my own game is so good that it can just handle anything. What a great self-reflection.
She is so incredibly self-aware, isn't she? And I think, it's incredible. And I don't think it's... I mean, maybe it occasionally creeps into the self-critical, the overly self-critical... But by and large, I think it's just this sort of startling and refreshing level of self-reflectiveness.
I mean, she could get through that press conference so quickly and easily by saying nothing of the sort.
Yeah.
And yet she's prepared to look inwardly and give you that. What a line. Is anything you've seen from her since the Australian Open victory, does it concern you at all? Because, I mean, we're looking at... Alexander Zverev, we'll talk about him a little later, and we've had a couple of pops at him recently on our tennis podcast Twitter, you know, just making a bit of fun of him about the fact that he isn't delivering. Now, I know he's been unwell, he was ill, and I've had a couple of people say, leave him alone, you know, he's not been well, he's been injured, etc. But he's been losing in third and fourth rounds, and we've had a pop at him. Is it vastly different with Osaka because she's won those slams?
Yes.
Or do you have some cause for concern?
Yeah, of course it's vastly different, because he's never been past the quarterfinal of a slam. She's won the last two. It is a world of difference.
So why is she losing these things?
There has been a lot of upheaval. I don't ever think she's going to be a relentless, every single week dominating player. That doesn't mean she's not overall the best in the world, because that's what world number one reflects, doesn't it? But it doesn't mean not every world number one is Novak Djokovic. I mean, that's currently perhaps not actually the best example, but let's say Novak Djokovic of 2016. Not every world number one is like that, and I don't think she ever will be. I'm still not concerned. Another couple of tournaments, maybe I will be. I still don't quite know what to expect from her on clay, though. So I do reserve a little bit of leeway for that. And I don't know... Yeah, I feel like we've got a lot to learn about her in a lot of respects over the coming weeks. But, yeah, I'm not... no one should be hitting any kind of panic button for
me. I'm not concerned at all, to be honest. She's had the two... the two major things to deal with was the coaching change and the fact that she's dealing with being world number one. And the other thing she said in that press conference was, I thought I was dealing with the pressure of being world number one, but maybe I'm not. So she's aware of that. And I think it's quite likely that someone will overtake her as the world number one, possibly even this week with...
Could be Kvitova, couldn't it?
Could be Kvitova. And
or Halep.
Halep. And we maybe don't have high expectations of Osaka on the clay. So I just think the sort of pressure valve will slightly sort of diffuse a bit. And come the US hardcourt swing, we'll be looking at her and thinking, well, you know, she's won the last two hardcourt slams. And that's really what I'm judging her on at the moment, the fact that she's won the last two slams. I don't see any reason to be concerned.
Also, it shows how the dominance of Serena Williams over the years and in the men's game of Federer, Djokovic, Nadal, our assumption is that there will be multiple slams and dominance everywhere else. Whereas, actually, if you look between the years of Serena and Graf, Navratilova, that didn't necessarily happen. You know, you got players who won a few and it was really competitive. And let's be honest, the depth now is unlike anything it's been in a long, long time. It really goes deep now, doesn't it? The amount of players that can play incredibly high-level tennis. And it's one of the reasons that I think with Serena Williams withdrawing from this tournament again, we don't actually know why. I think it was a knee injury, was it? Yeah. When I say don't know why, she didn't do a press conference about it. She had ill health in Indian Wells.
Viral.
It is finally starting to come into view, the possibility, the talking point, of whether she is actually going to break 24 Grand Slams.
Well, I've just seen on Twitter that Patrick Mouratoglou's been talking.
Oh, yeah.
Claxon.
Really?
Yeah.
Surely not.
He has said that her next tournament will be Rome.
Okay. Which is a way off.
And the interesting thing is she pulled out
that's 6 weeks
before her match, didn't she? So it wasn't like she's picked up the injury.
Yes, she lost a set to Rebecca Peterson, or Pettersson, as some people are now saying, which obviously on paper is a pretty startling thing to happen. But she seemed physically not at her peak, but there didn't seem to be anything specifically ailing her. There was no strapping, she didn't have any medical timeouts. Then the next day the withdrawal came. And
the knee would be a concern, because I remember back at the end of 2015 when she lost that match to Vinci at the US Open, she didn't play again for the rest of the season. I remember Patrick Mouratoglou saying then that Serena's knee cartilage is practically all gone, and she is risking a stress fracture.
Would we ever know anything about Serena Williams if it weren't for Patrick Mouratoglou?
Thank goodness.
He is our window.
Good on you, Patrick.
So her knee cartilage is
apparently practically all gone. I was looking at Patrick Mouratoglou's statement from at the end of 2015. So the fact that it's the knee is a bit of a concern, and clearly it was bad enough that she thought, oh, I've got no chance of playing the rest of this tournament, hence why she withdrew the day before. And she's given herself, what, 6-7 weeks before Rome? So
she always plays Rome. She loves Rome.
Mm. Yeah.
She met her husband in Rome.
I think that's correct.
Just having a memory. Not
she's won
I wasn't there, but
23 Grand Slam singles titles. Margaret Court is on 24. She's already overtaken Steffi on 22.
Straight to the big question.
What do you think? Where does she end up? Right now, right here, given what we know now, that she reached two Grand Slam finals last year. Was it two? The Wimbledon final and the US Open final. And she was beaten by Pliskova in a match that we thought she was going to win here this year. What do you think?
I feel a lot dodgier about it than I did, but the biggest burn I've... Actually, no, it's the other way. I was going to say the biggest burn I've ever had in the tennis podcast is to doubt Serena Williams. But actually, the biggest burn I've ever had in the tennis podcast is to place all of my faith in Serena Williams. So, hang on, Matt, you answer while I just mentally reverse my position.
Yeah. Sabine Lisicki, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Throwing me
a
hospital pass there. The thing is, it's so fluid and changeable, isn't it? Because, on the podcast 2 weeks ago, you were talking about her looking unbelievable against Azarenka.
Yep.
So I do think her tennis is there. It's her health that would concern me, the fact she's not putting, she's just, I think outside the slams, she's won 5 matches or something in her comeback. But the slams is where she has traditionally peaked. So this is a very long-winded way of saying, I think she'll win at least one more. Is that an acceptable answer?
I would probably agree one more if I had to.
So you think she's going to
put my money on anything?
Tie
right
the
now.
Record and that's it.
I think, if she ties, she'll really want to beat it, won't she? But the thing is, Margaret Court's record, I kind of feel like, does she need to beat that? I mean, if you look at the draws that Margaret Court was playing, I mean, there was like 16 people in the draw.
Records
sometimes.
Are records, and there will always be that asterisk where that nobody is, not enough people are going to be saying, yeah, but really the record holder is Serena Williams.
Do you think 24 for her is as important as Steffi Graf's record was for her?
I don't know.
No.
I don't know, but I don't feel that it is going to be satisfactory to her, ideally at least. I think if she can't win 25, I think she will come to terms with that, she will be at peace with that, she will accept that, but people like us will have this debate. And I think it's really unfortunate if that debate has to be had, because I think Serena Williams is the greatest player of all time. I just want her to be on 25 slams so that there isn't a discussion.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And I also think there's an element of, not that she would be the first woman to win a Grand Slam after having children, but I do think that is a significant motivation for her. She has set herself out, established herself as a role model and spokesperson for working mothers, I suppose. And the ultimate example of that would be to win a Grand Slam. But look, she's already a fantastic example of it, but I think that's a significant motivation as well. And yeah, you're right, all of those things for me, the fact that she's doing all of this post-motherhood, the fact that she almost died, etc., already make her the greatest of all time. But you're right, you know, people look at the bare numbers, don't they?
1,356 people have voted, Catherine, in the pole vault.
What is the pole vault?
She wants to know.
Those noisy kids are actually leaving the room in protest at this pole vault.
I wish I'd mentioned that about half an hour ago. 39% have said yes, she will do it. 43% have said no.
Is do it 24 or 25?
25.
25.
18% think she will tie at 24, and that'll be it.
Well, so we're in the minority.
More people than not think she won't do it now.
What do you think?
I think she will do it.
You think she'll do 25?
Yeah, I think she'll win 25. I think she's playing so well still. I think she's hitting the ball so cleanly that it will click.
The thing is about the prediction that we've both just made, Matt, is that as soon as, let's say she does do 24, suddenly she's odds on to do 25, isn't she?
Yeah.
Suddenly she'll be odds on to do 35. Suddenly everything changes. So I do accept that. But anyway, we've made our case. For now, tentatively standing by it.
Okay.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Right. So what about the blokes? Last night we had Novak Djokovic winning through against Federico Delbonis, who hit a purple patch of form that made him look like Rod Laver had come back from the 60s. I mean, left-handed, just going for it, hitting winners everywhere. And I just think it shows how incredibly durable Djokovic is and what a pro he is, that he doesn't panic. And he was irritable last night. Everything was winding him up. The winners that his opponent was hitting that he really had no answer to at the time.
He wasn't loving the new US Open last night,
was
he?
No, the surroundings wound him up, I think. And
he had one of his moments with a ball kid.
Did he?
Yeah. Yeah. Look, he's not alone in that, but that is a real sign that...
Yeah.
But he still
won the third set. Was it 6-1?
6-1, yeah.
And that, this is the thing. At the end of that second set, I think if you hadn't have had the past 8 years worth of experience with the guy to know that when he's near the top of his game, he just swallows these sets occasionally and comes back and dumps you on your backside 6-1, which is what he did. I think you might have thought, oh, hello.
Well, I
didn't think that, because he has this ability to just ride these storms out, doesn't it?
It's like, for most players, when they've been taken into a third set, you think, right, now this is the crux of the match coming up. With Djokovic, you think, okay, we've had the good bit of the match, and now he's just going to walk through the third set, and that's what he did. I must say, I'm obsessed with Delbonis's ball toss. Like, it looks like it's about to go into orbit, the way he throws it up so high. And he sort of... I mean, that would be enough to distract me if I was playing him. And the way he sort of puts his service arm up in sort of stages. It's like his serve, it's got absolutely no rhythm to it, and yet he sends it down, and because of the lefty angle, it's a bit of a weapon. But
my ball toss was pretty nifty last week against Solihull Simon.
I was just about to say, is it the highest ball toss in tennis? And then I looked over the table and saw David Law.
Oh, it's timing it beautifully. I won.
He's got a really wistful look in his eye.
11 games to 10, I won. It was great. 6-3, 5-7, victory was mine.
So. There's nothing like a misunderstanding of the tennis scoring system to make our listeners tune out in droves.
Add them up. 11-10.
Credibility dissipating by the second.
Didn't Michael Pernfors, wasn't he once leading Connors at Wimbledon, like 6-1, 6-1, 4-1 and lost? Like,
correct.
He must have won more games in that match. And
yeah, moral victory.
He didn't go through, David.
Yeah, but I use ATP finals rules. You know, we have the count back on game percentage.
Was that so agreed with Solihull Simon before?
He understands now that that's what we were doing. That's why we left after the second set and not played a tie break to decide it.
Right.
So, it's all fine. What have we thought of Roger Federer? He's looked a bit grouchy as well, hasn't he?
Really grouchy.
Who was it he played?
Radu Albot.
Yeah, I must say, lost the first set.
I thought that was going to be a bit really easy for Federer because of the lack of weapons that Albot has. But I didn't quite take into consideration the fact that Albot's been in really good form, and in good form in Florida, and he clearly likes the conditions.
And he's very tactically canny, isn't he?
Yeah.
He beat Dan Evans, didn't he, in that final?
Yeah.
And Challenger final.
He was really...
No, Delray. Delray Beach.
Mm.
Was, yeah.
And he was really sort of dogged. And he put himself in a position to win the match. I mean, he was ahead. Was he serving first in that second set? I think so. He was kind of ahead in the score. I really thought that Federer might be about to go out.
He was properly on the ropes in a way that Djokovic, who lost a set last night, was not.
No, indeed.
Really on the ropes. I don't think New Miami suits Roger Federer particularly well. I don't think he likes the grit in the surface. I don't think he likes the change. I don't think he thinks it's the new US Open.
When you get to a certain age, Catherine, change doesn't.
He's not hitting the ball. He looks a different player to what he looked in Indian Wells to me. He's not making backhands, but he's missing on the backhand a lot. It's a lot of mistiming. He's not in my list of people that I think might win it.
But it's possible.
Really? That's a big statement.
I regretted it as it was coming out. Okay, he's in the list.
He's not even in the list.
He's on the list. Oh, goodness. Matt, wow. Say something.
I think it's possible that he would have taken quite a lot of information from that first match, and he might have adjusted and be better today.
Topped up his canister.
Yes, against Krajinovic, he's got...
Tough that. Krajinovic beat Stan Wawrinka in the last round.
Did you see that forehand?
Wawrinka was 5-2 up in the tiebreaker.
Almost decapitated. Yeah, there was almost no Krajinovic to play. Stan Wawrinka had taken his head off.
There was a great ATP media tweet which said Stan Wawrinka is a savage.
Yeah.
Because it tried to put the ball through Krajinovic. Was it Krajinovic? Mm.
Yes. I'm going to do a David Law prediction now and say I think that could be tricky for Federer.
Okay. Well, you've already said he's not on the list.
He's listless. Federer is always on the list.
Right. Somebody who isn't minding the surroundings too much is Nick Kyrgios, who, whilst he was initially wistful about the departed Crandon Park, last night he played against poor old Dusan Lajovic, who was just his fodder for an hour as he put on a circus act, quite honestly. And he won 6-3, 6-1. But he hit two underarm serves in one set. One of them went for an ace.
An underarm serve ace.
And the low point of Lajovic's career right there.
He hit a totally unnecessary through-the-leg shot face-on, followed by a drop shot attempt by Lajovic, who just completely brain scrambled at this point, decided to get involved with this charade, and Kyrgios just lapped it up with a backhand paddled cross court passing shot. And then there was a no look volley winner from Kyrgios, and then he had a row with a guy on the front row who
got someone forcibly removed from the stadium.
The spectator called him a four letter name and questioned his haircut, to which Kyrgios said, "This is what you do on a Sunday night, is it? You come and sit on the front row to watch tennis and you give me a hard time." And so every time he won a point, he started applauding him, applauding the spectator, to a point where he got the spectator removed, who was flipping him the finger, and Kyrgios waved to him and said, "I loved every minute of it."
I mean, I did my usual morning routine of waking up and going on the ATP WTA app and checking the scores, and thought, oh, Kyrgios won 6-3, 6-1. That was uneventful. Then went and opened Twitter and thought, oh, okay, this was the most eventful 6-3, 6-1
ever. Suddenly there's a highlights reel of underarm serves. Yeah.
Only Kyrgios could make a 6-3, 6-1 that eventful.
Kyrgios has now got Borna Coric, winner to play Nicolas Basilashvili or Felix Auger-Aliassime, who is starting to motor.
Beat Hurkacz, didn't he, in the last round? I was impressed by Hurkacz in Indian Wells. Mm. And I know Daniela Hantikova was particularly impressed with Hurkacz as well. It's not quite Andreescu levels, but he's backing it up. He's backing up the Indian Wells breakthrough already.
I'm impressed with Hurkacz because he hits the ball with his eyes closed.
Yeah.
I mean, how's he doing that?
It is amazing. I asked Greg and Daniela about that.
No, he actually does.
Yeah, there's a lot of photographic evidence. I asked Daniela and Greg about that in the studio, and they were quite dismissive of it, which I thought was a bit unfair to Hughie Hurkacz. I thought he was performing a feat that no man had ever done before.
So now what you need to do, you need to get Greg to do a feature where he tries to hit the ball with his eyes closed.
Yeah.
I want to see this.
And the other good win Auger-Aliassime had was over Martin Fucsovics.
Which is
a really grown-up win, because he's so sort of physically strong. To beat him in three sets is a really good sign, I'd have thought, for Auger-Aliassime.
Agreed. agreed. I would pick Kyrgios here I am falling into all the traps. Kyrgios is higher on my list than Federer.
Oh my goodness.
Unsolicited prediction.
That is very interesting. I think I might agree. Do you know what? I think they're going to meet in the final.
Kyrgios and Federer?
Yeah.
I think Federer's getting to the final.
Yeah,
interesting.
Why not? This is Roger.
It was in Miami. I mean, obviously different Miami, but it was in Miami that they had their last absolute, probably the best three-set match I can ever remember seeing.
Which
in
Kyrgios
men's tennis.
Has been tweeting about a lot. Happy memories. But I think the thing is...
Does he smell blood when he plays that guy? Syringe emoji.
The thing with Kyrgios is this ability to play at an obscene level without any form whatsoever coming in, as long as he's just happy and as long as he's feeling physically okay. He doesn't need to be...
Feeling physically okay thing is such a big if, though, isn't it? Because you know that he doesn't have the physical grounding and work there to... He could just... Something could fall apart at any minute.
But it reminds me of Andre Agassi winning Wimbledon out of nowhere in 1992, in that he had no grass court preparation. He didn't even play an event on grass before it. Won Wimbledon, and he could turn up at a tournament and win it with no matches at all, whereas Jim Courier would need to have played half a dozen tournaments. And we've seen Alexander Zverev last night go out to David Ferrer and actually say, I'm somebody who needs a lot of matches. And there's a really big difference there. Zverev's had the illness, he's been unwell, he's lost some weight as a result of it, he's not had any matches, and the result is he's not playing very well at all.
And he's
been by David Ferrer, who's about to retire and who's about 48.
Well, and Zverev, when they played in Acapulco, Zverev handed him a gift for his retirement at a big ceremony, and now they've gone and played in Miami, and Ferrer's saying, hang on a minute, I'm still here, and gone and beaten him.
Can I have my gift back?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Zverev's in a vicious circle. He's in a catch-22 situation. He needs matches, but you have to win matches to get matches. So
we're not worried about him, though, are we?
I'm a little bit worried about him, yeah.
I think my worry with Zverev is he doesn't win when he plays badly. Like, we're talking about Federer and Djokovic not being at their best, but they've managed to get the wins. Like, if Zverev's not playing well, he gets, like, the match against Ferrer turned into just a baseline rally, and, you know, Ferrer, even at 37, is going to win a lot of those. And he didn't do anything different, really. There was no spark, and he wasn't figuring it out, which you always get the sense that certainly Federer is looking for ways to win, and when he's not at his best. I don't see that yet with Zverev, and that's what's happened to him in the slams, I think, as much as anything. He's not played well and not managed to squeak through those early rounds.
And yes, he has been ill. I know that, and I know how dreadfully awful man flu can be. We all know how awful man flu can be.
Yeah.
And genuinely, having a cold can be absolutely debilitating and miserable. I know that. But equally... And I said this, and I put it to Daniela and Greg quite a few times on the prime coverage of Indian Wells. How many times would Murray, Djokovic, Federer, Nadal, plenty of others too, have played with a cold, man flu, and we just wouldn't have known about it? They might have won, they might have lost. I'm sure both have happened lots of times. But we didn't know about it because, you know, they're professional. They neither want to nor think it's appropriate to
talk
about it afterwards.
Isn't it nice, though, that he's happy to just tell you how it is? I've got the flu, or I don't feel very well, or I've felt rubbish. So, you know, that's why I was rubbish.
But he's doing it when he's lost, so it sounds like an excuse in a way.
I love how candid he is in the press conferences.
I love it because it gives us something to talk about, but part of that talking, I think it's okay to be criticising. You know, he does an awful lot of whinging. And he does do the whinging when he's winning as well. You know, we were just saying, Matt, that, you know, at the end of last year when he had his biggest win ever at the O2, he still spent most of that week talking about how knackered he was and how the season was too long. And that was while he was winning his biggest title to date. So,
and he was the youngest bloke there who should have been able to deal with it best.
I mean, yeah, I'd rather he said sort of slightly annoying things and said nothing of interest at all, because that gives us something to talk about. But
Aston,
I still do think some of it is a bit annoying.
Roger Federer asked in his press conference if he was maybe about to manage Alexander Zverev, or Team 8, were about to get his company, his business, and Federer basically wouldn't be drawn on it at all.
No comment.
Yeah.
Do you know, I only got the pun of Team 8 yesterday.
I've only just got it about 4 seconds ago.
Right. It's because the emphasis is put on the wrong, I guess it's teammate.
Yeah.
Team 8.
So there
but
we are.
It doesn't... It like 99% works, doesn't it? But it,
I've only been hearing people say it for 4 years, and I've got it about 4 seconds ago when Catherine's just said it, and the look in her eye. So there we are.
I had it.
All right. 22-year-old, whatever you are. Carl Edmund's playing well.
He is.
Yeah.
Slamming neck. Who did he beat yesterday?
Milos Raonic.
Crikey.
Straight sets.
Very good.
I think that's a really good win. I mean, Raonic does play better in Indian Wells than Miami, doesn't he? Indian Wells really suits him.
And he did have a bit of a back issue, but Edmund just took care of him.
Like, yep.
John Isner, next defending champion. I think Edmund's going to win.
Had anyone else forgotten that John Isner was the defending champion?
I certainly forgot that Sloane Stephens was the defending champion when she was losing to Tatiana Maria last night.
That was a surprise. Crikey, it's all happening.
It's 1-1 there, head-to-head, Edmund and Isner, I think. And Edmund got him at the US Open once, so...
Yeah.
Good test of his returning.
And Raonic is a good preparation.
And also good test of your... of how much tough you are, because you know you're only getting a couple of chances per set and you need to be sharp for them.
Raonic is a good prep though for it. It's going to be interesting. So I think that just about covers things. We have just presented Matt with a Fulham FC football shirt, his beloved Fulham FC.
A signed shirt.
A huge thank you to our listener and Kickstarter backer, Mark Forbes, who's Southampton's kit man. And that's now the full set. He's given me a West Bromwich Albion one, he's given Catherine a Reading one, and here's Matt now, his face lighting up here
thank
in this little coffee shop.
Really, I appreciate it so much.
We both saw Matt complete the career Grand Slam at the Australian Open this January, and that was that. You looked pretty chuffed about that, but today is as chuffed as I've ever seen Grad Matt.
He hasn't put it down since I've given it to him.
Yeah, yes. You were
Fulham's,
clutching it like
Fulham's
a sort
relegation
of...
shirt immortalised.
Yeah, we don't have a very good record at relegation on this table, do we?
Reading have barely won a game since I got my shirt.
Should we talk about something
else? It's not your fault,
Let's talk about
I'm very grateful.
But that just about sums it up for another edition of the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and executive produced by tennisballs.com with our mascot, Rio with a Y. Catherine, you'll be back with us next week after a week in the studio presenting live tennis from Miami. Matt will be watching it diligently throughout the week as well. We're making plans for the rest of the year, all your podcasts. We're going to be back every single week. We're going to be daily at the Slams. We're going to do as many shows as we possibly can. We hope you're enjoying us bringing them to you. Make sure you leave us a review on iTunes if you haven't already, please. And also, tell everybody you know. Tweet about us. Retweet us. Do whatever you want to let people know about the Tennis Podcast.
Everyone that's interested in car park prices at tennis events the world over, let them know that this is the outlet for them.
Absolutely.
I'm never going to live that down, am I?
This is the listening experience that they've been waiting for.
Yeah, this is must-listen material, folks. And we'll see you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.